श्री गणेशाय नमः। ओम श्री सरस्वत्यै नमः। ओम श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। सच्चिदानंद रूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादि हेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्री कृष्णाय वयं नमः। श्री कृष्णाय वयं नमः। वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानंदं कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरुं। कृष्णं वंदे जगद्गुरुं। मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे परमानंदमाधवं परमानंदमाधवम्। ओम वांग मे मनसि प्रतिष्ठिता मनो मे वाचि प्रतिष्ठितम् आविरावीर्म एधि वेदस्य मानिस्थ श्रुतं मे मा प्रहासीहि अनेनाधीतेन अहो रात्रान् संदधामि हृदं वदिष्यामि सत्यं वदिष्यामि तन्माम् अवतु तद्वक्तारम् अवतु अवतु माम् अवतु वक्तारम् अवतु वक्तारम्। ओम शांति शांतिः शांतिः। सदा शिव समारंभां शंकराचार्य मध्यमां अस्मदाचार्य पर्यन्तां वंदे गुरु परंपरां श्रुति स्मृति पुराणानां आलयं करुणालयं। नमामि भगवत्पाद शंकरं लोकशंकरं शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं। सूत्र भाष्य कृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः। ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्ति भेद विभागिने व्योमवत् व्याप्त देहाय श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। श्रीदक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। श्रीकृष्ण गोविंद हरे मुरारे हे नाथ नारायण वासुदेवा जिह्वे पिबस्वामृतमेतदेव गोविंद दामोदर माधवेति हे कृष्ण हे यादव हे सखेति हे कृष्ण हे यादव हे सखेति हे कृष्ण हे यादव हे सखेति। So we left in the last session, the three portions Bhagavad Gita is usually divided into. I told you that, you know, we will refer to Vedas in some way. We actually, when we talk about Sanatan Dharma, Vedas, they are usually counted as four, but they are actually one Veda split into four by Veda Vyasji. That's why his name became Veda Vyas. Vyas means to divide. He divided that into four. That's why he became Veda Vyas. At the end of Vedas or the final conclusion of Vedas comes something called Upanishad. Have you heard this term, Upanishad? Upanishad is nothing but the final conclusion of Vedas. When we talk in Vedanta as Prasthanatrayi, I'm not taking in detail right now, but I'm just telling you, just hear it and go, that when we talk about Prasthanatrayi, Vedanta Pramana Grantha, there are three grantha we call about. The first one is Shruti, second is Smriti, and third is Brahma Sutra. The first one, Shruti, when we call for Vedanta Pramana, is actually Upanishad. Upanishad are Shruti Pramana for Vedant, which is self-knowledge. The second is Smriti. When I talk about Smriti, we talk about Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is one Smriti for self-knowledge. The third thing is called Brahma Sutra, which is a creation of Vedavyasa himself. It's in a sutra form. It only describes about the self-knowledge. Now, why I brought both these three things together? Upanishad, for studying Upanishad, one has to be an adhikari. He has to be a qualified student for an Upanishad. And there are certain qualifications mentioned in the Veda itself, who all can study Upanishad. If a non-qualified student goes and studies Upanishad, he will get derailed from spirituality path because he won't understand anything what is going on. So, actual qualification, when we talk about, it's a preparation of our intellect to receive that higher knowledge. Upanishad style is very clear. It goes straight into self-knowledge. It will not create a bhumika like Bhagwan is doing. Bhagwan is giving the self-knowledge in a very, very polished way. He is giving all side things for you to understand, relevant topics here and there. He is picking up and giving you in Bhagavad Gita. He is also teaching self-knowledge, but in a different way. So Smriti, Bhagavad Gita teaches the same self-knowledge in a different way altogether. Another thing which Bhagavad Gita does, which Upanishad doesn't do, is Bhagavad Gita is one shastra which gives you things called Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and other yogas to talk about. They are all preparation for Upanishad, all the other yogas. You will see many, many different yogas in here. Bhakti Yoga is very popular. Dhyana Yoga, or you know, sannyas, what we call it, Dhyana Yoga. Meditation, the science of meditation, is also very important. Karma Yoga is very important. Bhagwan Krishna is going to teach you how to do karma. But before coming there, why I brought this up? When we come to Brahma Sutra, the third portion of Vedanta, Brahma Sutra is very high level text, very direct. It has got 555 sutras, and 555 sutras, when you even read the, you know, Mangala Charana, the start of it, you won't know what he's talking about. It's very, very difficult to grasp. So it's only for a very enriched Vedantic student. Now, the reason I brought this up is, when I talk about Shruti, which is Upanishad, Upanishad teaches us something called Mahavakya. I'm not sure how many of you have heard of this. Mahavakya is actually the one sentence, which is in one sentence they've given you self-knowledge. So four Vedas have got many, many Upanishads. Every Veda has got one Mahavakya. So we Sanatan Dharmis have got four Mahavakyas to talk about. Okay, Prajnanam Brahma, I'm giving you the Mahavakya here. I'm only telling you, but just listen to this. Prajnanam Brahma, Tattvamasi, Ayam Atma Brahma. Anyway, in this way it goes. There are four of them. I'll tell you all four of them in a while, but I want to bring you to Tattvamasi more importantly. What happens when we say, you know, all these four Mahavakyas, directly talking to you about yourself. Tat, Tvam, Asi. You are that. That means what? That means what here? The Supreme Consciousness. Okay? You are nothing but Supreme Consciousness. What are you talking about? If I'm Supreme Consciousness, my life's problem, my depressing situation, I'm fighting day in and day out with my things. What are you talking about? How can I be Supreme Consciousness? You should not take it at the level of body. In our analysis, you have to understand there are three, four aspects you need to understand. Body is something which is physically visible. It's called perceived thing in us. Little bit internal to it and subtler than it is, it's something called mind and intellect. Or we call it Antakarna. Antakarna comprises of four things. Mind, intellect, ego and memory. Man, buddhi, chitta and ahankar. This is how we call it in normal parlance. So there is internal something called mind and intellect. Now remember, bodily, we all are different from each other. And we can never be same. Even if somebody is born in my family itself, it will be different from me. The same goes for mind and intellect. Now remember, body is different. First thing, who runs the body and body? Body is run by mind and intellect. Okay. Now, one mistake which usually many people outside they do, which spiritual people start growing in that, people go to gym. It's a very popular thing. I don't have to tell you, it's a very popular thing everywhere. They go to gym, some go regularly, some may not go regularly. You are building what? A physical health. What about your mind and intellect? Do you think a physically healthy body without a healthy mind and intellect can make your life? This is the problem where people go. Yeah, no, I also go to gym. That's not the point. I'm not saying don't go to it. But the point which is more important is you must have a practice, that you must have an thing in your or routine that you go to your mental gym also every day. Physical gym, even if you do, you know, once in 2 days, it's fine. But mental gym, you need to go regularly. Because that health is what is going to maintain your body. What will happen when situation comes? Now see Arjun, he was a very healthy, fit and everything. But mentally, he collapsed in the war field. This mental collapse happens with many people. So the second portion you need to understand is mind and intellect, or the antakarana. The third portion you need to understand is your soul. Now remember, when we see, you ask a person in a common parlance, who are you? What do you mean by who are you? And this means what? How will you identify yourself? How will you identify yourself? First identification addresses your body only, na? I am this, you know, 5 feet, 6 feet or whatever, you know, staying in so much space, having so much education degree. They are all your qualifications. They are not you. My question is not, what is your qualification? My question is, who are you? Then people will say, I am happy, I am disturbed, I am depressed, I am, you know, cheerful. They are also qualifications of your mind and intellect. They are also not you. My question is, who are you? This is where we get stuck. That is what Upanishad tells you, Tat Tvam Asi. That Ishwar, that Supreme Consciousness, which is shown in the BMI chart, those of you who know the BMI chart, that Supreme Consciousness is you. But don't mistake it that mind and intellect is Supreme Consciousness. Don't do that mistake. At the body level, I am God. Don't think that also. There are episodes in Srimad Bhagavat where there is one buddy person who comes up. He thinks somebody goes and peps him up that you are more powerful than Krishna, you know. It's called Pundarik Vasudev. It's an episode which comes in Srimad Bhagavat. He gets pepped up in such a way, he goes and writes a letter to Bhagavan Krishna that I am the original Krishna, you are the fake one. Return me the Sudarshan Chakra and Padma and everything. Bhagavan laughs at the letter. You see the kind of thing, he thinks that he is God. Bhagavan, and you know, Balramji returned the response and saying that, okay, I am happy to return Sudarshan Chakra to you if you think you are real Krishna. I am happy to give you Shankha Padma also. You keep it with you. But there is a small question, small point. He said, what? Come and fight a war with me. Now, Pundarik Vasudev, because people deluded him that he is God, he fixed some fake hand here, two of them, and he held, you know, two things as a drawing over there. And he started walking like that because he misunderstood himself as God. Don't do that mistake. At the level of soul, me and God are not different. For sure it is not. But at the level of mind and intellect and body, I can never be God. That is why in spirituality, when a sannyasi becomes near to Brahman, there is a word which comes God-man. Remember, it's called God-man. They are not called God. Why they are used God-man? You know, there are these things which we need to clarify now because there are so many, you know, nonsense going on in the society. I don't want to even discuss that. But the point is, our scripture says, Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. The one who has known Brahman is Brahman himself. In whichever form you see. Why? When he transacts through the world, when he transacts through people, when he transacts through situation, he is well placed in Brahman. He is not in the situation. He is not in the people. He is not in anybody. I just told you about the example of supercomputer, no? His he is so well placed, even when he is talking to you, even when he is interacting with you, even when he is with you, he is there. Because he is permanently placed there, while walking on earth also, he is the incarnation of Brahman itself. This is what scripture says, Brahmavid Brahmaeva Bhavati. The one who knows Brahman, not knows in book knowledge, one who has experienced Brahman, is Brahman itself and is the Supreme Consciousness. In that form and manner, within all of us is Supreme Consciousness only. The one word which we commonly use is soul. Soul is no one but Supreme Consciousness alone. That is what Tat Tvam Asi means. That Tat, which is Supreme Consciousness, is you. You are the same. But you have to experience it yourself. What is experiencing God means? Experiencing God means removing yourself from all the conditions which you have encompassed on you. All the conditions which you have taken on you. So spiritual knowledge is not teaching you a new thing. Spiritual knowledge is only removing your conditionings. What? My conditioning is, I am body, I am mind, I am intellect, I am so-and-so's son, I am so-and-so's, you know, husband, I am so-and-so's daughter, I am so-and-so's this. All these are conditionings. Spirituality says, you are no one but Supreme Consciousness alone. That is what Tattvamasi is. So the Tattvamasi, the Tvam portion is about you. Bhagavad Gita's first six chapters, actually third chapter to sixth chapter, talks about who you are. Because Arjun's problem can be solved only by telling him who he really is. He has misunderstood. What is his misunderstanding in the first chapter? His misunderstanding is, oh, Bhishma Pitama. He's the one who nourished me. He's been so dear to me. He is my Pitama. How do you think in the war field I am going to shoot an arrow towards him? I can't. God is impossible for me. And he listed down all the list of relatives in the first chapter. Now when you go to war, there are only two options you have. Either you kill someone or you get killed. There is no third option for you. Arjun, you may consider them to be your relative. And you may want to respect them and not want to fight with them. But just think for a moment, will they consider you like that? They are standing in front of you with the bow and arrow and everything for the first moment to shoot you down. Your consideration is not going to discount their thing. They are not going to consider you like that. In the war, you have to be a warrior. In the war, you can't be a relative. In the war, you can't think of who nourished you. In the war, you can't think they are the one who contributed to my thing. All that is immaterial. This war was in preparation for 12 years. Did you not go to them and ask them even, you know, many times that let's not go for the war, let's solve it amicably? Did they heed to your request? They point blank said no. Duryodhan even went to the extent, say, forget about giving you, you know, five villages. I'm not even going to give you space to put one needle there. Forget that. He is that Duryodhan you have to fight with. And you say that, you know, they are our relatives. Why Bhishma Pitama didn't knew that Duryodhan is not right? Now, on this point, one more thing I want to add on here. Remember, sometimes we don't not only face our own karma, sometimes we have to face the karma because of our choices also. Bhishma Pitama has got a very pious life. He is dharma incarnation in itself. He has led a very dharmic life. But where did he get stuck? His vow, come what may. He only took the vow, no? He should have said, instead of saying, come what may, whosoever is ruling the kingdom, I will always be with that person. Even if that person is whatever reason, that is his mistake. He should have said, amongst them, whosoever will do dharma, I will be with them. It would have been easy for Bhishma Pitama to skip side and come to Pandava's side. And he would have saved his life. Same Bhishma Pitama, so much dharmic, had to undergo a death in the war field only, no? And in the hand of Pandavas who he nourished. When Bhishma Pitama was, with arrows were being shot at Bhishma Pitama, Arjun's caliber is so much, when the arrows used to hit Bhishma Pitama, Shikhandi also used to hit arrow on them. But Bhishma Pitama knew which arrow is Shikhandi's and which arrow is Arjun's. Because when the arrow used to touch him, he used to just throw it away. When Arjun's arrow used to hit Bhishma Pitama, he used to close his eyes and say, this has to be Arjun. The deeper the wound, it means it has to be from Arjun's bow only. He used to recognize Arjun that way because Bhishma Pitama was very, very close to Arjun. Bhishma Pitama always used to see in Arjun that after me, if somebody can take my position, it's him, Arjun. This was the level of Arjun and Bhishma Pitama. And that's why when the war came, Arjun crashed. Why? Because Arjun forgot who he is. And in that second chapter, Bhagwan says, when he says, Natve Vaham, Jatu Nasam, and all those things, Arjun, you are considering them to be body. But at the level of body, everybody has to go. Nobody is permanent here. So many came and tried to become permanent. Ravan. Is it possible? In these days also, I read in newspapers, there are many people trying to stay young. I don't know what it means. Stay young and do what? You stay young forever. Do you have a real goal in life or no? Stay young and create disturbance for others. What kind of a... You can never stay the same ever. It's not possible. This body has to go. Because whatever is born in this creation, whatever is created here, it has to go. Nobody can remain permanent here. Even when Jay and Vijay, when they came down, became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha and all those things, they also tried to ask the boon to become permanent. What happened? Destroyed worse than anything else. Because, remember, Creator has got his way to protect this creation. He knows what is best. Even if such people come and ask for boon, and there are people who are trying to invent now to stay young forever, God must have his way already. Because do we think that we can outsmart the Creator? Try to do it. We'll be making a fool of ourselves only. There are many trying to do that outside. You just open the newspaper, you open the television, you will see many of them. You are making a fool of yourself. You can't outsmart them. God is the Creator, means I only give an example of supercomputer. His one portion is whatever mind and intellect is. Just think of yourself, how powerful your mind and intellect is. Sitting in this classroom, if you have visited any foreign country or anywhere, just close your eyes and think of you were already there. Without even taking any flight, any visa, nothing. It's so easy. Mind is so powerful thing. Intellect is so powerful thing. Since it is powerful, it needs to be disciplined and tamed. So Bhagwan starts the second chapter, telling him who you are. So in the Tattvamasi format, the first chapter, first six chapter of third to sixth is basically talking about who we really are. Tvampad. Then the next six chapters, the way we decipher Bhagavad Gita is who Bhagwan is. And remember, in those six chapters only Vishwarup Darshan comes. And at the end, in the last of the sixth chapter, which is 12th chapter, Bhagwan gives one beautiful chapter called Bhakti Yoga. 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is Bhakti Yoga. How to be devoted. Bhakti Yoga he gives, because you just think, you have to realize the self. I have no devotion to self. How will you realize something where you have no devotion towards? I want to realize God, but I don't want to do Murti Puja. There are many who come to me also. Why? God is everywhere. He is not there in the idol. Who said that to you? God is everywhere. That's true. Can you realize it? When you go to temple, you know, I am a very big proponent of that. In Sanatan Dharma, you must have this practice of going to temple regularly, at least once a week. Why? Because remember, in that temple, on that idol, lot of pujas and mantras are done every day. Because of that, even though God is everywhere, He's all pervading, you feel the chaitanya, you feel the power on the idol more. go and ask and stand in front of Tirupati Balaji? You will feel different. Who says that, you know, temple God is not there? If he is everywhere, he is not there in the temple. I do not know how we become so lethargic and lazy that we don't want to get out from everywhere. There is a Christian, and you know, father is not father of the church, father of a child who called me saying that, you know, I was a brahmachari in Patiala at that time. He called me and said, you know, I am fed up of my kid. They have something called Sunday mass. Every Sunday they have to go for. You see, every religion has got it, huh? By the way. I do not know. We are given freedom, so we have misused that freedom. We don't go. Even festival come, we don't go. And then we give excuse like, God is everywhere, you know. That's, I do not know where that excuse comes from. We have all kind of excuses, lame excuses for these things. So that father came to me and told me that, you know, I am getting, you know, scolded by the church community. He doesn't listen to me. So I said, even though he's a Christian, let me try. I went to that child. Child was very smart. He asked me, you know, okay, I'll listen to you if you can give me the answer. He said, God is everywhere. I said, yes, he's everywhere. He is there in the room also. I said, yes, he is there in the room. He is there on my bed also. I said, yes, he is there on the bed also. Then why should I go out and pray to him? So I got stuck. Now I am not prepared for this answer because I did not go with these things. But it's such a God's grace. I asked him, tell me only one question. Air is everywhere? He said, yes. Then why do you need fan? Tell me. Air is everywhere, right? Why do you need fan? To circulate it and make you feel. In the same way, God is definitely everywhere. No second thoughts about it. But you feel his presence more when you go to temple. And remember, for us, if we think that we can gather all our, you know, qualification on our own and, you know, fight through everything on our own to gain spirituality, it's not going to happen. It will come. You must have a practice. At least festivals you must go. You know, I came here, I go to Kerala, there is not even once I don't go to Guruvayur temple. It's like it's my personal deity kind of a thing. I go to Guruvayur every time when I go to Kerala. I don't miss out that. I can miss out on meeting relatives, but I will not miss out on my relative, meeting my real relative who is him. Because he is the one who is managing me. He is the one who is there with me thick and thin every time. But the point is, we manage all other relations, but we forget him. So Tatpad is basically knowing about God, who God is, and trying to create devotion for God. Asipad means basically maintaining the unison with God. But in the chapters from 13 up to 18, Bhagwan Krishna has given many other facets like Ahara Shuddhi, Sattva Shuddhi, then, you know, Shraddha. All these chapters are given. You know, this is also one more point I want to talk about here. Some people may feel that in spirituality, why Bhagwan is talking about Ahara Shuddhi? You know, why it is important? Some person asked me also, why it is important for me to be vegetarian? What is the harm in being non-vegetarian? I will go to temple, I will, you know, do prayers and everything, but let me be what I am. I said, there is a problem. Read Bhagavad Gita chapter 16. What is the problem? Now I should tell you here, this is a forum, I can and use this forum to say that also. Food does not give us energy directly. The subtle aspects of food convert into energy and become energy for us. Now remember that, huh? When we eat food directly doesn't become energy. Body splits it into portions and converts into energy. Now just think for a moment, if your food is filled with cruelty, if your food is filled with, you know, inflicting pain on someone, what will be the subtle aspect of that food? Pain only of someone, right? Then why do we complain when we go through some things like that? Bhagwan says, Arjun, I am very clear here, Ahara Shuddhi is of prime importance if you want to grow spiritually. See, by my saying things won't stop, that's not what I mean. But I'm saying, slowly, gradually, cultivate the habit to control it. Start from controlling. I'm not saying overnight, you know, some non-veg will become vegetarian. That's not my expectation also. It's not going to happen. Because you have created a liking, you have created a, you know, desire, you have created a vasana inside you have to go through that. Now it will, you have to struggle through the whole thing, but discipline yourself slowly, gradually. That discipline will give you mental strength to come out of the whole thing. So that in that last portion, Bhagwan is giving the unison between how the tat and tvam can be united, how I can realize that, you know, God is sitting within me. I don't have to go far. You know, when we say these things that, you know, God is everywhere and all those things, when you realize God within you, when you have seen God within you, you started seeing in others, I will tell you from this stage only, stop going to temple. But till then, you must go. This is my point. Till that time, you don't realize that. Don't take that excuse at all. Our temples are built for such things only. There are people who are utterly disturbed when they go to temple and they come out and say, I don't know what transpired there, but I feel some mental peace. Why? There is sattva there. In the current episode which I have uploaded and the last one which I have uploaded, I have spoken very, very much about the sattva, rajas and tamas gun. Listen to that episode, what sattva does and what rajas does and what tamas does. The problem is we have lost sattva. We are toggling between rajas and tamas. The other portion is actually, most of us are toggling between tamas and rajas, the other way around, down. Tamas is more now, because things have become very luxurious for us. At the click of a button, things come, order everything online. I think only parents can't be ordered online today. I think rest everything is available. Parents and brother sister can't be. Thank God it is not there. I do not know what's going to happen. Otherwise, a kid may fight with parent and say, don't worry, I'll replace you online. This is going to be a state afterwards. I don't know where the whole creation in the world is going. You see, it's become so much dependent that we don't want to move out of a place. We don't want to do the little bit better things also. This is what Bhagwan says in the next six chapters, which is 13 to 18. He teaches us how you can develop your inner self, how you can fix your faith correctly, how you can correct your ahara, your food, so that you are ready to receive the knowledge. Till then, it's all practice. So in that thing, now, you know, with this whole view, I want to come to another portion of Bhagavad Gita overview and essence, which Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji takes up in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita when he starts to explain about them. Why I'm taking it here in my podcast, because my class, us, you know, people were different, I did not take that in detail. But if you read that preface has explained you the whole Bhagavad Gita incompletely. But the point is, only those who understand Sanskrit can understand it. So that is the reason I'm trying to explain it here. This whole creation, you need to understand in two different facets. When we use the word dharma, dharma means what? Religion is the common translation, right? But I mentioned in my podcast, dharma doesn't mean religion. Huh? Religion is a very, very poor translation of the word dharma. Dharma means duty. In literal form, dharma means duty. Okay, now dharma is how do you define dharma? Actually, dharma comes from the word dharayati iti dharma. Dharayati means that which upholds the society. Now, I'm telling you here point blankly, other portions, other part like Christianity, Islam and all, they can qualify to become religion, but they do not come under the category of dharma. Sanatan alone is a dharma. Why it is there is what I'm explaining you from the thing now. Why Sanatan is a dharma? First understand what Sanatan is. One literal meaning of Sanatan is that which is coming from time immemorial. No, that's not the real meaning of it. That which is not created, because it is not created, it will never go. What I told you before, whatever is created has to go. Sanatan, now remember, compare it with other religions. All religions are created. Christianity is created. You know, Islam is created. Bauddh is created. Every religion is created. Now, in literal way, when we convert the word religion, we call them community. That is why when there are communities, communal war can happen. Because they are communities. They are not dharma. What Sanatan Dharma means, one meaning is it's coming from time immemorial. But the one meaning is, it is not created, so it is not going to go anywhere. What do you mean by not created? When I say not created means it is the substratum of this creation. It is what is holding this creation. Give you one example. I think I've given in podcast, but I'm repeating it here for some of you. When somebody goes to watch a cinema, in cinema, there is a hero also, there is a villain also. You don't know personally the hero, the one who acted as a hero. You don't know personally the one who acted as villain. You have no personal grudges or, you know, favorite amongst anyone. There may be some people who are, but I'm just talking about here example. But why do you want that the hero should always win and the villain should always be defeated? I'll give you one straight example which my guru used to give. Even if the one who acted as villain goes to watch the same movie where he has acted as villain, he would also sitting there want that the hero should win. Why? That is called Sanatan. Satya, Dharma and other things are the substratum of Sanatan. We have no doubt all other religions in some small or big form are following Sanatan only, but without understanding, without respecting it. So that is the, you know, base of Sanatan. When I say Sanatan Dharma, the Dharma is divided, the duty is divided into two portions of knowledge stream. One is called Pravritti Dharma and one is called Nivritti Dharma. Have you heard this term anywhere? Anyone? I hear the nod from her. Pravritti Dharma means the duty of action. Nivritti Dharma means the duty of relaxation. Relaxation means what? You know, there are two kind of people you will see here. The people who are action oriented. Now remember, everyone is action oriented by default. That's a different thing. Out of tamas, somebody may not do action. That I'm not coming to that point. But everybody has to do action. If you are born in this body, you have to do action. It's not a choice. You have to get up, brush, bathe and all those things. It's a regular thing you have to do every day. But Nivritti Dharma means what? You can reach a level of preparation that God frees you from action. It is called Nivritti Dharma. Nivritti Dharma means you don't have to do action. That is where sannyasi falls into. A sannyasi is not bound to do any action. Remember, even we should be grateful to sannyasis and all who teach these days. By default, it's not his duty to teach. He has already realized the self. He can sit in meditation and experience the bliss day in and day out. Why will he come to people to teach? It's not his responsibility to teach. He is doing the teaching as a seva to his God. It's his seva. You know, this is how the whole thing works. Sannyasi is free from every action. He doesn't need to do any action at all. This is what Bhagwan says in 9th chapter, 22nd verse, that I carry and run behind him with his yoga and kshema. What is yoga and kshema? You listen to the podcast, the last two ones, you will know. A literal meaning is, yoga means, running after those things which I don't have in life. Which is what? Money, success, you know, settled life, car, whatever XYZ, you can name a thing. Running after those things which I don't have today. Kshema means praptasya rakshanam. What I have, saving that is called kshema. Now remember, I have used this example and there I've told, gave it to Abhijit and Nisha also. Remember that mostly if you divide your life, 55 to 60 years goes in yoga. Running after accumulating things for my future, for my comfort in life, for my luxury in life. 55, 60 years goes in that. And after 60 years, goes in rakshana. Now you have to protect what you have accumulated. Buy a land. You know, you bought a land by your hard-earned money. 3-4 days later, or a week later, or a month later, somebody came and claimed, this belonged to me. Go and fight a case. All your hard-earned money gone. Now go and fight a case. It may take 15 years, 20 years, you never know. You just think, money you put in bank, mutual fund or anything also, you think it will automatically grow. You have to work hard for it. Sit with, you know, bank people, put in, you know, keep changing your investment here or there. So if you generally divide population's time, 55, 60 years goes in yoga and another portion of the life goes in kshema. And in between this, the biggest lose out which happens is many opportunities for doing punya comes, but they are not able to encash it. What they earned here will be left here. You cannot take a penny from here, by the way. How much rich you may be, Ambani, Lakshmi Mittal or whatever, you cannot take a penny from here. When the moment you travel from this body to another one, there is another currency which works there. There was a story in Srimad Bhagavat which came. There was a king who was there. His life was a mixed life, of Papa and Punya both. So one day Naraji came and told him, you have a chance to grow in your life in vertical growth. Why don't you spend effort towards that? He said, why should I do that? He said, do you know when you go there, what's going to happen? He said, no worry. I have so much money here. When I go there, I will give, you know, corruption money to somebody. Just pass me to heaven, you know. Do that. You know, there are strict norms over there. First thing they will tell you is that, sorry, sir, that currency is not valid here. If you travel overseas, you go with Indian rupees and you give the Indian rupees, what will they say? Sorry, sir, this currency is not valid here. In the same way, there is a different currency which works there. The currency you earn here, one portion must be spent to earn the other currency. Like people who earn rupees, some people do invest in dollars and other things, or if they travel, they are able to, you know, save on conversions and other things. In the same way, with your earning only, you can earn punya. And you only have to do it. Nobody can earn punya for you. Remember, in this point, everybody is alone. Even mother and father can't earn punya for me. You know, child can't earn punya for mother and father also. Everybody has to do it independently. Because that's your independent currency, that's your independent bank account. The moment somebody travels from there, the first thing they will see is that, they will see your whole account of the life. Okay, tell me what all you did. And you can't bluff there, saying that, no. This traffic light caught me wrong. I was not there. You can't do that over there. There the CCTV is very strong. It will show you everything correctly in the same manner. Here, sometimes CCTVs can do error also. In Kerala, there's a new issue which has come up there, you know, showing somebody else sitting with you who's not even there because of AI error or something like that. But there, remember, there is not even a wee bit of error. It will show you correctly. Dharmaraj is going to sit with you and give you a whole account of your life, what all you did and how much you earned, and then will pass on you to heaven or hell accordingly what you earned. And you can't negotiate. No, my brother is just coming. He will give you his currency. Sorry, nothing doing. It's only your option. So he says, here, Pravritti Lakshana, Nivritti Lakshana is for those people who have developed enough punya, has developed enough knowledge to gain the self, those people go to other part of it, they are free from action, Bhagwan fulfills their yoga and kshema. For other people, we have to struggle. And yoga and kshema is something which doesn't leave us at all. If we are born, we study, we come to job, the first thought is future. Now, I'll tell you one interesting thing which Pujya Gurudev used to say. You know, one portion where many people waste most of their time is, either brooding over the past or worrying for the future. This is natural, huh? But remember, both of them are not with you. Future is not with you right now. You have to make it, right? You are worrying on something which is not there with you. And you are brooding on something which is also gone. You can't change it. Then why worry if you can't change it? The problem is, in brooding over the past and worrying for the future, we are losing the present. The only thing we have in hand is present. And if you have invested in your present well, you have nothing to worry about your future. Future is already made. Because future comes out of present only, no? It's not an independent thing lying somewhere that, you know, even if I don't work in current, my future will already be made. Maybe parents may have saved money and all, but remember, parents, if they have saved money also, how long it will take you? Whatever we save and earn, it takes minutes to lose. It takes years to earn. So, you know, I tell people when they come to me, that to your kids, no, one thing you must give. Whether you leave big wealth or not, it's immaterial. But you leave them with the ability to earn and stand on their foot. For that, spend your money. You give them the ability, the culture, that they can protect and lead through the journey correctly without falling wrong. That is the investment in the child. Unfortunately, I do not know what the investment definition has become. Probably investment bankers have changed it completely these days. You know, and they will be running after, sir, do this mutual fund, do that, do this. Are, how long will it secure me? For a particular point in time only, no? Earn punya, keep the option open. Because, one more thing I'll tell you, the power of punya I'll tell you, and I've said that in the Delhi satsang also. See the power of punya. People understand the power of money, but they don't understand the power of punya. You know, you are born in a good family, you have good parents. How much did you pay to buy them? You have good brother and sister. How much did you pay for them? You have a good husband and wife life, a couple life. How much did you buy it for? We don't understand. It is not from our money it is coming. It is coming from our punya. Some people have got devastated life. Parents are not right somewhere. Somebody's married life is wrong. Somebody's brother, sister are not right. Are, when you see these things, understand they did not have punya for that. And they don't get it in this life also. They don't want to earn it further also. That's the bigger problem. You know, if you have punya, trust me, even if you do not have enough money, when the time comes, somebody will appear to help you. That's the power of punya. We don't understand it. We think money is powerful. There is a MasterCard ad which I keep saying. There are not everything. There are things which money can't buy. For everything else, this is MasterCard. This is the ad which they used to be there. But I understood coming in spirituality, it is a spiritual dialogue. There are everything which money can't buy. That's true. There are things which comes from somewhere else. You know, in life, when you see in entirety, you will see there are many, many facets which are important. Gita ji tells you, amongst this pravritti lakshana and nivritti lakshana, pick up whatever is your nature, whatever is your character, whatever is your focus. But do it the right way with a focus that you have to reach God. Because God will take the responsibility of leading you from pravritti to nivritti. A sannyasi also, sannyasis also can be seen in many ways. Many people misunderstand sannyas ashram is that it's an ashram of escapism. I can't do good job. I can't get hired in a good company. I'm not so talented. I gave up everything and ran to sannyas. There are people like that also who do it. But their sannyas ashram will be limited. How long will you go? You can't stay there forever. Because your choice has been arisen out of your own, situation. It's not out of your choice. It's not out of your, definite choice of yours. It's not out of your faith. So just think, nivritti has to be coming from pravritti only. When Bhagwan tells us karma yoga in Bhagavad Gita, the purpose is very clear. Make you do karma yoga in such a way, keep goal of God in mind. And when you go through karma yoga, at the end of karma, you will automatically be dropped into nivritti. So, you have heard this chaturth ashram, right? Brahmacharya, grahastha, vanaprastha and sannyas. Now, one way to look at these ashrams are in silos. Brahmacharya is a different ashram with different duty. Grahastha is a different ashram with different duty. Vanaprastha is different. No, that's not correct. Definitely, yes, their duties can be understood differently also. But the one thing you need to understand, it's a gradual evolution. From Brahmacharya, people graduate into grahastha. There are some people who from Brahmacharya graduate directly into Vanaprastha. They don't come to Grahastha only. Because they have enough qualification, they don't want to go to Grahastha. They come straight into Sannyas. They come straight into other areas. Vanaprastha is actually, the definition of Vanaprastha I should give you here when I'm taking that term. Vanaprastha and Sannyas are two different terms. Okay? In our scriptures, Vanaprastha is spoken about, the literal way of Vanaprastha is go to forest. But these days you can't do that because forests are reserved areas. Somebody will arrest you only if you go to forest. You can't go to forest like that. See, the literal meaning is forest. In olden days, that used to be the thing. Give the responsibility of grahastha to your kids and everyone and you move somewhere else. But these days, how do you relate to that? The way to relate is that you, when you grow up and your kids have grown up and then they've become of the age of taking responsibility, hand over the responsibility to them and start detaching from your responsibility. Now, one thing I'll use here, many people come and ask this question that, you know, we are mother and father. No, now we have kids and we have grandchildren also. Now, isn't our duty to take care of our grandchildren? There is a very strong answer which I am going to give. Grandchildren is not your responsibility as grandparents. Children are the responsibility of parents alone. Grandparents have this much that they can contribute to cultural education. Can give, you know, contribute towards giving culture to you. But they are not their direct responsibilities at all. Vanaprastha ashram is very clear about this. Vanaprastha ashram is usually with wife. It's not, you don't go alone. So it is basically, Vanaprastha means what? Slowly, gradually devoting towards spiritual practices. Start detaching from the worldly things is what is called Vanaprastha. And the gradual evolution of that is what? Doesn't matter if it happens in one life or not. Some life it will happen. Its gradual evolution is into Sannyasa ashram. Sannyasa ashram is alone ashram. There is one episode which I will tell you here. It's coming from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Yajnavalkya had two wives at that time. He was a great spiritual master. Yajnavalkya had two wives. He called his wives at one particular point in time that, you know, I have had a good life with both of you. Whatever I have earned, whatever I have accumulated, I am dividing between both of you equally. And, you know, now you live on from here, I am moving to the forest. So, he had two wives, Katyayani, he also was one wife, and Gargi was also another wife. So, Katyayani was happy with that half. Gargi was a very intelligent wife over there. She asked him, you stayed so long with us in this life, and we had many, you know, celebrations together in this life. If you are leaving this and going to the forest, you must be getting some bigger happiness over there. What is that happiness? So Yajnavalkya turns to Gargi and tells, Gargi, very intelligent question. You are absolutely right. I am going to go, leave everything and go to that bliss, which is the ultimate, from where there is no return at all. So Gargi says, if that is the case, then Swami, give my half of also to Katyayani and I will come with you. Then Yajnavalkya says, I'm sorry, you need to understand certain conditions there. We can't live as husband and wife there. The only relationship which can sustain that ashram is Guru and Shishya. So you have to accept me as a Guru and you have to accept yourself as a Shishya. She said, I'm ready. And just remember, with that incident, there is a whole Upanishad which came called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is a conversation between Yajnavalkya and Gargi. The whole Upanishad is on that. You see how evolved our couple were, how well they understood their life. So the only final goal of everyone is actually Nivritti Dharma. But Nivritti Dharma by me thinking will not come. I cannot escape. There are many people I told escapism, they go to, you know, run away from life and do all those things, but they will be doing a bigger work over there. I left everything and came. I'm doing a bigger business over there. That is what the situation will happen. Because then you'll start selling malas and start selling other things and making a business out of that. And people will start becoming averse of religion. So religion and start becoming averse of dharma. So one thing we need to understand is, this whole pravritti and nivritti dharma is what the final goal which is Bhagavad Gita is teaching. It is telling you, teaching you how to go through pravritti correctly. Today also we are doing action. Action differs in what? I was reading one article today. It was about the thing which is going on, geopolitical scenario between China, Russia and other things. So they say that don't just go by what people want you to see. Don't just go by what people offer you and then, you know, you just go blind with that. Don't do that. Have an intellect, have a thought process to assess the intent behind it. Now, if I'm giving you example from this stage itself, China went and helped many, many countries with many objectives. You had BRICS or I don't know what all initiatives they have system. But remember, their intent was only one. And since beginning, if those who have seen it, they will understand, their intent was only to make it a Chinese territory. Capture them. Capture their political environment. India has been putting a front for that, even though we have also a lot of difficulties now within our inner system and all, many things need to be changed. But that's besides the point. But just see the intent behind it. Even if somebody is helping, why are they helping? What is the intent behind it? Because intent is what tells you what is the action, you know, why you did that action. So action differs with the intent behind it. Many people, the problem which happens with action is, it's me and mine. Me and mine means what? I will earn only for myself and my immediate family. I may contribute somebody if somebody comes for help, that is if I wish. You know, if somebody is very good to me, I may help also. But basically my objective is very clear. I will earn for me and myself, me and around me. But they say the intent of action should not be that. Intent is what makes you wrong in terms of action. If you just think, you know, I'm sure many of you must have seen this movie called Three Idiots. Right? I'm not bringing the movie here. My point is not that. There is one line which is very important. Aap kamyabi ke piche mat bhago, aap kabiliyat banao. Don't run after success. But run after making your capability. If you are capable, success will automatically run after you. Even if you go and sit in Himalayas, somebody will come searching for you. This is the power of capability. Capability will make you successful. If you run after success, neither you became capable nor you got success also. You will be struggling with success. So Bhagwan says, for pravritti's intention should be very clear. If you are doing it only with your selfish interest, it's not going to make you grow anywhere. It will lead you to some place at some point in time, but not going to lead you to ultimate. Lead with correct intent, build your capability, and slowly, gradually start working towards your devotion. And then the natural step is what? Offer your capability to the altar of devotion. And remember, when you start offering your capability to the altar of devotion, he will give you his capability to add to your capability. I told you, when I started giving podcasts, it was only for a class of 20-25 people. See where we have reached in just 7-8 months. Who did it? I didn't do anything. He is my marketeer. Krishna marketed it. Krishna published it. Krishna did everything. He came to you, made you. I do not know how you guys reached my podcast also. I have done nothing for it. Every credit goes to him. The way he has done it. Why? He is the head of the whole cosmos. I keep telling when I have a job also, but I'm slowly, gradually retracting from the job to spend more time here. So, you know, I keep telling in my partner in the job, when we both came into that association of job, he told me, when he spoke to me, he said, I'm sorry, I can't come into a boss and subordinate relationship with you. It's not possible for me. Let's become partners. I said, okay, no problem. I became partner. So I was telling him that day, you know, for me, I have only one objective way to look at it. My boss is God. And he is what? My boss is such, he owns the whole cosmos. So I have nothing to worry for. Wherever I am, he's taken care of it already. In whichever form and manner. Why? He is so, first of all, he is all capable, he is all powerful. Second thing, the entire cosmos belongs to him. Nothing in this cosmos is devoid of him. The third thing, when you work for him, you become free. Why? He will give you from every nook and corner, he'll make you feel, he'll see from behind the door and run away. He's like that. That's how Lord Krishna works. You know, when your boss is the master of the universe, he's the master of the cosmos, which worry can consume you? You can give freely, you can stand freely. Now you see, I came here, I thought that I will speak about the objective and essence of Gita, and you will see that I never came up with any written article or anything to, you know, speak to you. Who spoke? He spoke. He knows his audience very well, better than me. He knows what to tell you all. He knows how to keep you engaged. He knows how to keep you there. No, why should I worry about it? So this is how God functions. So you build capability, start with capability first. Build along with capability, quality to grasp spiritual knowledge. Build devotion in you, and slowly, gradually, when you grow, offer your devotion at the altar of God, and then you will start feeling that how He takes care of you. Every worry in our life, we have never taken care of, neither we are capable to take care of. Let me tell you upfront, even somebody may be sitting at the pinnacle of wealth, I can guarantee you sitting here from the Vyaspeeth that nobody can ensure that every situation of theirs is managed on their own. It's not possible. We all need Him. The more you devote to Him, the more you feel Him, the more you feel Him, the more you will become freer. And trust me, we all came here to become free only. We didn't come here to go more worried than here. You know how we were. You know, I'll tell you one thing honestly. There are so many people, worried people I can talk about. There is a businessman who was admitted into a hospital. He had three sons. So, doctor told him that you may have only few hours to go. He said, he saw two sons standing by him, by his side. He said, thank God. No, see how he's thinking. He's not thinking good that they are standing there. He's thinking, thank God, at least one is taking care of the business. So, at least one is managing that well. When the third son came, he kept the hand and said, "Arey, who is managing the business?" And he died. Now remember, what was his last thought while dying? Worry for business. I don't want to tell you what happened after that, because that's very, difficult to hear also. This is how life functions. We don't know. Bhagwan says, "Ante Narayana Smriti." We must have. How will you get Narayana Smriti at the end? How will you remember God at the end of the life? Will it come automatically to you? No, it won't. You have to practice when you are alive. To reach there in that practice. When you have Narayana as your Smriti, you don't have to worry about any life. Our Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad says, when such person leaves body, who has got enough punya also, and has got God's grace also, ehi ehi vadanti iti ahutayah. The punyas he has done in life, they come as air hostess, making his journey very comfortable throughout the life, through the next life. It's mentioned in Upanishad. I'm not making it for myself. Upanishad says that his ahuti, means his punya, comes and facilitates his journey to the next life, and that's how he reaches there, and then God's grace keeps him there, and whichever way it is. So this is the objective of Gita, that become capable, earn some devotion, offer your devotion to God, offer your capability to God, and then move on with that. Slowly, gradually develop in faith towards God. Let Him do things for you. He is with open hands available for all of you. Hari Om. Kayena vacha manasendriyairva buddhya atmanava prakrite svabhavat karomi yadyat sakalam parasmai narayanaeti samarpayami श्रीमन नारायणायति समर्पयामि ओम पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ओम शांति 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 हरि ओम श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः हरि ओम ओम तत्सत्